Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block with Jennifer DeVoe, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, 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 all you rockaholics and entertainmentaholics out there in LA and every fucking where else. It is time yet again for another thrilling, exciting installment of, you guessed it, Jenny's Real Talk on the Block, coming at you live each and every Wednesday, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. That's not Pacific Daylight Time or Eastern Time. That's Pacific Standard Time, 3 to 4 p.m. every week. This is your host, hostess with the mostest, Jennifer DeVoe, feeling like shit this week. But I'm here in the studio, and that's what counts.
Yes.
Sorry you had to listen to a replay last week, but Jenny needed to start a new job so she could make money. So it is what it is. Yeah, anyway, so the show still got paid for. It just wasn't here. It is what it is. And this is my wonderful co-host and business partner, also known as the husband.
The husband.
James Muse.
What's happening?
What's up?
I think your food, because you've been upchucking.
Right about now, I wish I could upchuck.
I'm sorry, y'all. Tired of this. My wife is sick.
I'm tired of this fucking heartburn and gas and stuff. Just the smell of food makes me want to throw up. I just wish I could throw up.
Need to go, I guess, go see a specialist.
No, it's called I had the flu, and I'm getting still getting over it. And my stomach does not want to cooperate
still
yet.
You still got a few days.
Don't tell me that. Plus, I have a cold. Plus, I have a cold too. So, I'm double whammied this week. Anyway,
I had it earlier.
Yes, you had it before me. Yeah. I blame you for my flu.
But I didn't have a stomach issues. I just had body aches and I guess headache, and I took my remedy, my NyQuil, and sweated it out.
Yeah, well, mine was coming from both ends.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And I'm not filming on Facebook this week.
No, no Facebook.
So everybody can fuck off.
Because she's green, y'all. She's like the Hulk.
Oh, God, that reminds me of that movie. Did you ever see that movie Click? You say Click?
My
niece is in the studio. She doesn't really want to talk. She's shy. I mean, she can talk if she wants to, but I know she's shy, so.
Maybe we need to get her matches. You'll say, put somebody on blast on the radio.
Anybody you want to put on blast?
Put a motherfucker on blast.
No. No? You don't want to call anybody out?
Somebody from the fourth grade?
No. Somebody that pissed you off?
Counselor or somebody?
Anybody? No, wait, you're on number four. Anybody at all?
Nope.
No? Okay. Well, my niece Michaela is in the studio with us this week.
You shouldn't want to put a motherfucker on blast.
I know. I said you should. I said, you know, what about any kids that pushed you down on the playground when you were a kid?
You can tease them now.
Be like,
till I'm on the radio, bitches, what are you doing?
Like, Timmy Horton, I don't like you. No, I mean, I don't know. You don't have to swear, because I know you don't. So, but I'd laugh my ass off if she said the word bitch or something.
Go ahead. It's worldwide.
Actually, I said it before, and I didn't like
say
it.
What before?
I know.
Huh?
I know
say what?
What you're trying to do, I'm not saying it.
He's trying to get somebody to say fuck you. He's trying to get her to say fuck off.
No, I'm going to get her to say bitch. Not just bitch.
That's bitch? All. What? No.
And she said, I know what he's trying to do.
That's funny as hell.
I'm absolutely right about that one, Miguel. I was trying to get you to say bitch.
Oh, we have a caller.
Oh.
Dang.
That might be our host.
Hello, you're on the air with Jenny's Real Talk on the Block.
Hi, this is Robert Yelling.
Hey, Robert Yelling. I was just about to announce you, actually. So you came on at the perfect time.
Oh, perfect.
Yes.
Right.
So our guest today, unfortunately, it's a call-in guest, but we're glad that you called in. Are you able to, you know, get on here anyway, either way? And this is Robert Yelling. He is co-author with Jeff Emerson on a book called Beyond ADHD, Overcoming the Label and Thriving.
Okay.
And I was looking at some of your excerpts and some of your stuff on the book, and wow, just a lot of stuff there. It's crazy.
Yes, it is.
What prompted you to write this book in the first place? Like, what was the, you know, behind it? What was your reasoning?
Well, Jeff was incorrectly diagnosed with ADHD about 7 years ago.
Oh.
And he rather than just accept the diagnosis he was given, he kind of unpacked it slowly but surely with a number of different neuroscience and neurological experts.
Oh.
And then from that he realized that there's a lot of things that are being thrown into this ADHD basket.
Oh yeah.
And so he contacted me, and my background is I'm an educator and a high school sports coach. I'm also an author of many books.
Okay.
But I've written in the mental health field for quite a few years. So that's how we came together. And of course I have a vested interest in how ADHD is treated in the schools, because I coach and teach athletes.
Right, and you have to deal with them. You have to deal with that, you know, that type of thing. So that makes sense.
Right, right. And also, you know, and I've noticed, and really from writing this book and learning as much as we learn, I've noticed that, you know, teachers and the education system are very quick to put jittery kids into what I would call the ADHD protocol, where they call the school nurse, the school nurse calls the doctor, they get the kid to the doctor, and then they get examined, and after an average of about 15, 20 minutes only, they're prescribed these powerful psychoactive drugs to combat the so-called ADHD symptoms.
Right.
And I feel that there's a real basic unfairness to that, because no one should be prescribed potentially a lifelong prescription of these very powerful drugs that do alter your brain chemistry over a 15-minute examination that really is based on 9 behavioral checkpoints.
Right.
That could contraindicate 100 different things.
Right.
So that's where my vested interest in writing this book came from, was just hoping that we can somehow slow down the amount of diagnosing and start getting to know these kids and these adults better to find out how they tick, so that we can find out what's in some cases really going on with them, and in other cases try to find other healthier ways to combat or to help them with their ADHD, knowing that in some cases, of course, medicine is the only solution for those who really have biochemistry issues.
Right. Now, how old was Jeff when he was diagnosed? You're saying 7 years ago. How old would that be? What would that put him at?
He was 34.
Wow.
Yeah.
A diagnosis for something like that, this, at that age?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's kind of crazy.
Well, that's actually the fastest growing segment of new ADHD cases is the adult population.
In their like 30s and stuff? Wow, okay.
Yeah, 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm.
That's crazy, okay. I mean, one of the biggest reasons I took on or had, you know, told Desiree that I wanted you to do your book, I had a reason for that myself. My son was misdiagnosed with ADHD when he was 5. And they put him on 3 stimulant-based drugs, Dexedrine, Ritalin, and Adderall, before they would even allow me to put him on a non-stimulant-based drug such as Strattera. And then years later, come to find out, I kept telling them he was not ADHD. If he's anything like his father and I, he would be bipolar. which is a totally different animal.
Yep.
And it turned out I was right. He's bipolar. He's not ADHD. Mm-hmm. So they put him on all these medications and other stuff that he should never been on. He lost a lot of weight. He couldn't sleep. There was a lot of issues. So I know what Jeff is going through in the sense of, you know, he was misdiagnosed. Yeah. But, I mean, I saw my son go through this. So, I mean, I was misdiagnosed myself, but with, like, severe clinical depression and anxiety before they finally came to the conclusion that I'm bipolar with anxiety and stuff like that. But still.
Yeah, and that's the usual. Those are the two usual things they misdiagnose bipolar people with before they finally get to that. In fact, a psychiatrist in San Diego who we cited in the book, Dr. Jane Tanaka, who was the Southern California Child Psychiatrist of the Year about 5 years ago.
Okay.
She told me that the average person that has bipolar, and you might be able to relate to this, takes an average of 10 years of misdiagnoses before they get it right.
I got lucky, and it only took them two. I got very lucky, but I was also proactive in my health. You know what I'm saying? Like, I read up on stuff. I went online. I researched everything. My family nurse practitioner is the one who suggested to me, once I started being fully honest about all my symptoms, that's when she said, you know, I think you're bipolar. You might want to think about that. And I went home and I researched it online. I looked everything up. I was like, whoa, yeah, she's right. Holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I hit every marker. So.
Yeah, yeah. You bring up a really good point there, and that is that, you know, that you were old enough to carefully describe your symptoms and your behaviors and also go online and see for yourself. The problem with ADHD diagnosing, especially in schools now, is they can prescribe kids as young as 2.5 years old.
Oh my God.
With these powerful stimulants, which I find appalling, because I don't know too many 2.5 or 3 year olds that aren't edgy or itchy and moving around, and you know, their attention goes a million different places.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's called
growing up.
Yeah. That's normal.
And and that's the first thing. And then the second thing is, how's a 3 or 4 year old kid going to describe what's going on?
They can't.
You know, but the medical profession, you know, and I'm speaking generally here, because there are a lot more and more doctors are pulling out of this. They're pulling out of this paradigm that you should do a checklist diagnosis and then prescribe. More and more doctors are pulling out of that and looking at the whole life patient.
That's good.
But generally speaking, they don't give people really time to describe. And even with school children, they don't get a chance, because they've already been pre-diagnosed by not paying attention in class, or being fidgety, or being frustrated that they can't see the chalkboard, which could be a vision problem as well as ADHD.
Mm.
And, you know, and that's the big problem. I mean, Jeff and I just don't understand, and this is what was one of our motivating factors in writing the book. We don't understand why something as complex as the symptoms of ADHD, anxiety, and on, OCD. We don't understand why such complicated sets of symptoms get prescribed these very powerful life altering medications without some sort of a thorough workup, thorough examination, and thorough interview. None of those things happen before these prescriptions are made.
Right. I mean, like I said, mine was 2 years. I got diagnosed when I was, I was 27 when I started the process. I was 29 when I was diagnosed properly. And they put me on... I was a guinea pig too, though. I was on so many different medications we realized I'm a manic bipolar. I'm not a depressive bipolar. So they were trying to put me on antidepressants and other crap, which I ended up being severely allergic to, in the sense of it would make me hostile and just really agitated, and I just wanted to scream and yell at everybody. You know what I mean? Like, it was just, it was going against my chemistry.
Right.
So I can't take antidepressants because of that kind of stuff. So even when you're finally diagnosed, right, you still have to go through a litany of medications before they finally find one that works for you. So, hello, Robert. Oh, did the call drop?
Yeah, we're back.
Wow. There we go. I was like, okay, crap. Ooh, we lost him. All right. I'm glad you're back. I mean, it's just crazy when you're misdiagnosed right, wrong or whatever, and then, or you're finally diagnosed right, but you still got to go through, you have to go through so many different medications before you find the right one.
One of the things in our research that was, I mean, this is really gets to the heart of it, is the way that Big Pharma leans on the school systems and the medical profession to prescribe for ADHD because it's in their vested interest. They make money every time a prescription's written. And, you know, and it's so over the top obvious that, for instance, take the drug Adderall, which I think Shire Pharmaceuticals, they put that on the market either in the late 80s or early 90s.
Yeah, my son was on. That was one of the, still one of the ones my son's was on. So, yeah.
Right. Well, if you look at the name of the drug, well, what it really means is ADD for all. That's what the guy at the scientist at Shire who developed it, that's why he named it that, ADD for all. To that extent, Shire has a newsletter for people living with ADHD, quote unquote, that is freely distributed in high schools around the country, and nobody stops them.
Jeez.
Yeah, and so basically what they're saying is as long as you're on your medication, you can do this, 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 and this. And that's just incredibly pervasive and intrusive and really takes away, in my eyes, it kind of eclipses the parent's role because the parents think that the pharmaceutical company knows better.
or the doctor does.
So it's that pervasive. And taking that a step further, you know, in the political arena, you know, everyone knows that Big Pharma has their hands in a lot of has their hands in a lot of politicians' pockets.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
When we were doing our research, we found out that out of the 535 currently sitting members of Congress, 533 received money from Big Pharma.
Whoa.
Or 532, excuse me. The only ones who do not are Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
Yes.
A Democratic congressman from Kentucky and a Republican congressman from Florida. Those are about 535 people.
Wow.
Those are the only ones who have, not only do they not receive money, but they've actually sent unsolicited contributions back.
Wow.
So three people who actually have a conscience.
Right.
Wow.
Right. And at the top of the list of money received in the course of their political careers are Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, and they've received about $4 million each.
Yeah. Everything's got to do with dirty. Them names always seem to come up when it's bad for the people.
Yeah, well, I'm just stating facts, and it really tells the story of why we can't get over this hurdle more readily of prescribing, even though more and more doctors, including the man that created the ADHD protocol, the checklist protocol, Dr. Alan Francis, he's against the way it's prescribed now too. So he's actually championing the cause of these other doctors who want to get away from prescribing and really start looking at the whole person and working with them that way.
Oh,
well, I mean, it's kind of hard to do that with a 5-year-old, but I see what they're saying. I mean,
yeah, well, I mean, the 5-year-old up in Canada, I'll give you a really good example of that. Up in Canada, there's he's probably the top optometrist in the country, Dr. Patrick Quaid. And he's been tasked by the government to see how much they can reduce the ADHD diagnosis rate among young children in Canada through testing them for vision. Because a lot of times, you know, six of the nine five of the nine ADHD behaviors on the checklist are attributable, can be attributable to vision issues too.
Oh, wow.
So what Patrick and his team have done is they've actually reduced the prescription levels for 3 to 7 year olds in Canada by 20%, decreased the ADHD diagnostic levels because in those cases they found vision problems.
Wow.
Yeah, which was accounting for restlessness, lack of attention, lack of concentration, disruptive behavior, not being able to see the chalkboard.
Oh, yeah.
All these behaviors. I mean, if you have vision problems, and I did when I was a little kid, so I can vouch for this. You get mad. You get irritated. You don't pay attention. You can't see anything, so you just want to leave. And And unfortunately, in this day and age, a teacher sees that and goes, oh, my God, there's an ADHD kid.
Oh, my Lord.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why we wrote the book. We just need to, we just wanted to expose people to the many different other forms of treatment and the different forms of treatment that are available for this, but also to spell out both the pros and cons of the current system. So we also did mention quite a lot of pros in that there are several million people that do need these prescriptions because they really do have this set of symptoms that can be tied to this one thing. So we're not saying that, we're not saying throw the pills away and let's go au natural. We're saying let's be reasonable here.
Okay.
I'm looking here. I see about the, you're talking about the different foods that fuel the brain, which reduces food-induced stress, anxiety, and mood disruption, and keeps harmful foods away, or at least reduces them. And there, I see what you're seeing here. So this,
That points to a larger, that part points to a social issue, which I think is completely overlooked when doctors prescribe, or we get into these debates about ADHD. Well, the social reality now is I'm 58 years old. So I grew up in the 60s and 70s when there were no devices. There were 3 TV channels. There was AM and FM radio only. There were no computers. And we had a space program that was shooting astronauts to the moon. Mm. So we grew up with an imagination. The sky's the limit on imagination. Right. So we were constantly encouraged to imagine, to experiment, to try new things, to really expand ourselves. And this went from first grade on in the public school system. Mm. Well, all of that's been removed now and replaced by standardized testing and very linear core subjects that are now college prep.
Right.
The second thing that's happened is my attention span and everyone else every other boomer's natural attention span, which was fairly long, has been completely cut up by hundreds of TV channels, by mobile devices, by computer, by video games, by you name it, just more people, by more noise, and on and on. And we get bombarded with this every single day. So if you're a sensitive 6-year-old child and you're bombarded by all that all the time, and your parents already have given you a mobile device to keep in touch with them, you don't have a chance. You just don't, because that's too much external stimulation that's against our body's wish to be naturally calm.
Right.
So that is another reason we feel that ADHD diagnoses have exploded, because if you look at the timeline, the chart, going back to 1977, when about 2% of people were diagnosed with ADHD, the population was diagnosed with ADHD, now it's in the 10 to 12 range.
Right.
None of those, we had 3 channels, we had no mobile devices, we had no computers, we had no internet, we had no video games, we had none of that.
Yeah.
So you can literally track the advent of all those things to the explosive growth in ADHD diagnoses.
Yeah, because we didn't even know ADHD. What was I was like, what's that? You know what I mean? I didn't know what that was. I grew up in, you know, in the 70s and 80s. I was like, what? What the heck is that? They didn't have that when I was a kid.
So, right, right. Well, it was, I mean, ADD was, you know, that's been in the, that's been in the manual of psychiatric disorders since 1952.
Oh, wow.
But we knew it in the 60s and 70s when I was a kid. We knew it as hyperactivity.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're diagnosed for being hyper and you were given, you know, Melaril, Wellbutrin, some sort of a mood-altering drug like that, but nowhere near the power of a Vivinase or an Adderall.
Right.
Or Ritalin.
Wow. Yeah, different things. I like hear how you talk about foods to increase and foods to avoid or reduce. About how they can affect your body and your mood and everything else. I like sugar. Holy crap. Thank God you're saying to avoid that. I was just like, wheat, though. Wow. Wheat, I was kind of surprised on that one.
Avoid
wheat?
Yeah,
well, wheat also has a sugar content. So that's one of the reasons why they're... but the big thing, you know, the big thing with sugar is our food supply, you know, it's been injected with high fructose corn syrup in the early 70s.
Right.
And that's another indicator. You can look at that event and the rise in ADHD, anxiety, OCD, and similar diagnoses, and even bipolar. And and you can see that all of it tracks parallel. So when corn syrup comes into the diet, all of those diagnoses go up.
Oh.
And so I contend that if we can just take half the sugar out of a kid's diet, then they're going to settle down quite a lot. And some of these apparently, you know, prevalent, obvious ADHD symptoms will go away.
I see gluten on here. I didn't even know what gluten was till a few years ago. I was like, what? What's gluten? This is crazy. This is a huge list of different ones. You know, what's gluten? How long did it take you guys to write this book?
We started working on it, or a version of it, about 5 years ago.
Okay.
And we kind of dispatched the first draft because from that we were able to figure out what we really wanted to write about. So actually writing the book start to finish was about 15 months. And, you know, and that includes all the research and so forth. So about 15 months.
I like how you have, things in here about, spending time outside, exercise, more engaging activities, stuff like that.
In other words, the baby boomer's childhood.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, which has been totally left by the wayside unless you're an athlete now.
Right.
Because, you know, kids used to, you know, when I was growing up, you got bikes. Everybody
had
to do
always outside until they brought
footballs outside.
No, until my parents bought an Atari.
I was still outside, though.
No, I still went outside a lot, but still. But you know what I mean? I would still, you know, I was like, oh, an Atari. What's this?
I mean, I played it, but still, I still like going outside.
Yeah. You know. Well, that's crazy, though.
Yeah. But I understand what he's saying, you know, the sedentary lifestyle, the inactivity, the not having to use your imagination because you got all this electronic equipment in front of you.
Right.
I understand all of it. I see. Because I'm kind of in an age group between what he's talking about as far as him growing up and then the younger generation. I'm kind of in the middle of that. So I seen that, you know. I was growing up where there wasn't all that interference. And then when I was a young man, when it was there.
Right. What's this?
Right.
I see about traumatic brain injuries. I was reading.
Yes.
What does that tell the listeners a little more about that one?
Sure. Well, as you know, as your listeners know, and we all know, traumatic brain injury and concussion has really, its public awareness profile has really increased in the last 10 years. mainly due to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and all the, you know, all the roadside devices that were hurting and killing people, but also because of sports injuries. When you have a traumatic brain injury, your brain changes. It's injured, parts of it don't work as well as they did before, and it causes all sorts of side effects, side behaviors that we may or may not have exhibited before. So one of the things that happens is when TBI or concussion patients go in for treatment, they're often misdiagnosed with ADHD because their behaviors become irritable and frustrating, and you know all the different checklist symptoms. They've lost focus and concentration. And those are all ADHD checklist symptoms, to be sure. But they're also what happens to someone when they have a TBI and they can't think as fast as they did, or they can't do as much as they could before, or they stand up and want to go, you know, play with their kid, and they're so dizzy they have to sit back down.
Right.
All those things really create ADHD-like behaviors because they're so frustrated and they just can't figure out why things aren't working. So we feel that anyone who suffered a TBI should never be diagnosed with ADHD until they've ruled out everything else. It should not be a first resort diagnosis. It should be a last.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I see here also another section where you talk about toxins.
Yes.
What about that one?
Yeah. See, that's another thing that is just completely not even discussed when it comes to ADHD or any mental health disorders. And that goes to why we wrote the book. We're bringing out stuff that no one ever talks about. But once we talk about it with the many, many doctors and leaders in this field that we spoke with, they're more than happy to talk about it, which tells me that they've been oppressed a little bit or suppressed as far as being able to talk.
Yeah.
The thing with toxins is the environment is full of them, the water is full of them, our food is full of them, and our immune systems are only so strong.
Right.
So if we have toxins going through our system, they create, you know, physiologically, they can create issues that lead to agitation, irritability, lack of focus, lack of concentration, a tendency maybe to lash out or express frustration because we don't feel good and we don't know why.
Right.
And again, all of these are right down the list of ADHD checkpoints. So a doctor treating an 8-year-old kid who's eating poorly, you know, the parents just haven't been able to give him adequate food for whatever reason.
Right.
And he lives in a part of the country where pollution is rampant, let's just say.
Mm.
And a doctor in that kind of a community, which tends to be rural, will not have the time or even the wherewithal to be able to diagnose for toxins because their office is stacked with patients they need to see. However, if they were able to, you know, test for certain toxins, even mercury or something, you know, something like that, arsenic in the water supply, they would probably test positive, and then that would lead to an entirely different course of treatment than giving them Vivinate.
Wow.
And that's something we really need to take a look at, because despite all the best efforts of people to clean up the water and the air and everything else, there's a lot of toxins out there, and we tend to focus on the ones that are carcinogenic, that cause cancer, but these toxins are causing all sorts of other problems too. We just don't see them because they're hidden. They're not obvious.
Wow.
Jeez.
Man, I'm looking at some of this stuff while I'm listening to you, and I'm like, holy crap, because it just really hits home. You know, I mean, I see stuff like, let's see, here another section where you have, it says adverse childhood experiences / childhood trauma.
Yep.
Being part of this. Or,
absolutely.
You know, possibility a part.
I mean,
you know, possibly a part, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for instance, if... you know, we found that kids that are raised in a home where there's a lot of physical punishment, which in my childhood was considered somewhat normal parenting, and today is considered a crime, abuse. We found that kids that are that have that kind of an upbringing are more sensitive. They have shorter fuses. They behave in a more disruptive way, primarily to seek attention because they're not getting the right kind of attention at home.
Right.
We find that their grade point averages are up to a point down from everyone else, and all of these things. If I was a general practitioner, I would diagnose for ADHD because it all checks out. However, the deeper issue is what's going on at home, and if that is were somehow rectified or improved upon, or the kid was getting therapy for physical abuse or just being mistreated, then that could all be worked out in a behavioral therapist way without needing the ADHD drugs. Maybe the kid needs a very mild tranquilizer instead of a stimulant, because they just need to be able to, you know, get their own edge down a little bit each day until they grow older and learn how to handle all of these negative feelings and emotions that were never, you know, was forced on them.
Can this carry obviously over into adulthood? I mean,
oh, absolutely. I mean, there, you know, the adult world's full of millions of people that never reconciled or healed from their childhood trauma, and when they become adults, well, that manifests in a couple of ways. The first very troubling way is some people act out, but the other way it manifests is we tend to be more hyper, more edgy, somewhat paranoid. And I'm saying we here because I had some difficulty with my parents when I was a kid, not to any great degree, but basically, my dad was a military commander in Vietnam, and he came home from the Tet Offensive, and he was changed because of all the suffering and killing that he saw.
Right.
And we went through a few really tough years in my household from that until he, amazingly, I guess it's because he's a high-ranking officer and knows how to do this, but he amazingly pulled himself out of it. And
nice.
And then that changed everything in our house again, but... And that goes right to my point of what happens when there's trauma going on in the household. I can tell you during, you know, those years, ages 10 to 13 for me, those are the worst years of my life to this day. And I was 10 to 13, so I have no emotional capability of handling it. And then it changed back as soon as my dad was able to pull himself out of that deep depression that he went into after the war.
Right.
Which turned out to be pretty textbook PTSD.
Yeah. Well, this explains a lot for me. That just answered a lot of questions for my life.
Uh-huh.
Because I grew up in a severely abusive home as a kid, and then my mom passed away 9 days before my 14th birthday. So all of it, like, latently went into my adult years because I never got help for it. I never got counseling. So that ended up manifesting in a lot of crazy stuff. Like, I've done a lot of stuff I should never have done. And the irritation and the anger problems and the so many things. Yeah, I see that now.
Yeah, and you know,
dang.
That's the thing, you know, and the hard part is we get out of our childhood, we go into adulthood, we're carrying this stuff. And in my case, you know, I've been diagnosed with child PTSD.
Right.
That's what I got diagnosed with, and it's right on, because there's certain times, once in a great while, if I'm in a really stressful situation today, I tend to be very, you know, if someone pushes hard on me, I will push back hard,
okay,
which is what I was taught to do to defend myself when I was a kid, that's a perfect example of a childhood behavior just crossing over in a really, stressful adult situation now.
Right.
And I'm largely clear of this because My dad also did something that's extremely rare for parents with adult children, and that's rectify it. Shortly before he died, he and I were really good friends in my adult life. I mean, it was great. So, but shortly before he died, he sat down with me and said, "Is there anything that, you know," he goes, "I know I caused a lot of disruption in the house when you were a boy, and is there anything that we need to talk about? Because where I'm going, I don't want to take it with me." And what he was doing was he was clearing the decks and giving us a chance to talk, so that after he did pass, it was completely clear for me.
Wow.
And yeah, that's rare. I mean, it was beautiful. It was wonderful. That's and I nice. Feel really blessed and lucky to be on the receiving end of that, because that has made my life pretty good.
That's awesome.
You know, with all this stuff, it just doesn't come up much, but, right. But unfortunately he's a rarity. I mean, most parents, they don't even want to open that can of worms and won't.
Yeah.
And it leaves it up to us, the adult children, to deal with it, which is fine, but we just, yeah. You know, but we need to know what we're dealing with too.
Yeah. I think, because of my mother not dealing with her stuff from her childhood and then her adulthood, then she ended up taking it out on us, and then we ended up, it's like the cycle just kept repeating itself, you know what I'm saying? So it's crazy.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's self-perpetuating, you know. And a quick example of that is this year, I'm really proud of this, but this year is 30 years since I last drank. And
good for you.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and the reason, you know, and I mean, I didn't quit for any, you know, I've probably been drunk 20 times in my life, so I never was a big drinker. The reason, you know, and I quit for totally different reasons. I like to get up early in the morning and write, and it's a lot easier to write with a clear head than when you have a hangover.
That's very true. That's very true.
So, however, you know, in doing that, I was talking to my aunt, my dad's younger sister, and she told me at the time, this is 1988, she told me, you know, "You're the only Yaling man that I know of that's quit drinking on his own, and I hope you break the chain." And I said, "What chain?" And she said, "Well, when I'm saying any Yaling man, I'm tracing you all the way back to 1830 when our ancestors first came to the United States."
Wow.
And I that really hit home with me. And what it told me, as you know, per this discussion we're having today, is it's up to us to break the chain.
Amen.
You know, it's not up to our parents. They had their chance. They didn't do it in some cases. Now it's on us. And the way I look at it is, rather than blame the parents either directly or passively, let's break the chain of whatever you need to break.
Right.
And let's be the ones that take that bold and courageous and difficult step.
Right.
And then pass that on to our kids, so that they don't have to deal with what we dealt with anymore, because we've broken the chain.
That's what I did. I broke the chain.
Yeah.
I refused to be abusive to my children because I didn't want to make them feel the way I felt as a kid. So I said, no, hell no, I'm not doing that. So maybe I've swatted them on the butt a tiny bit, you know, like, you know, or or touched their hand and went, no, we don't do that. We don't touch that, you know, kind of thing. But I never beat my kids, like, you know, what we went through as kids. And I said, no, I'm going to break that cycle. And I chose not to do that. But then my daughter has come out really good, actually. She has a little bit of the chemical imbalance, because mine is biological also, not just because of, you know what I mean? I'm predisposed for that stuff. It runs in my family, you know, chemistry-wise. My daughter has little things, but my son, his stuff comes from not just me, his father and I, but also from just being abused by a 13-year-old boy when he was 4. So,
oh wow.
Yes, sexual abuse, which, you know, is horrible. And so, because, you know, so it sucks that I didn't abuse my kid, but because of some other person, now my kid's got issues. So it really just pisses me off when things like that happen.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. That's just really a bummer.
Well, things happen. You can't control everything in life, but I mean, I feel bad for my son. I feel bad for my son, and he had to go through that. But yeah. I see how childhood trauma can really go over and could maybe get you cause for being misdiagnosed.
Sure.
Well,
yeah, and, you know, and to the, you know, to the whole point about food and toxins and so forth, again, that's a major point we make. And there's actually a new body of healthcare providers that have emerged in the last 7 years or so. It's called functional medicine.
Okay.
And what it really is, it's old-fashioned medicine before they gave prescriptions.
Right.
And so they sit there and do a complete history of you like it's exhaustive. In fact, we put a case study in the book just to show how exhaustive and complete it is, comprehensive.
Right.
And they literally list out all the food you eat, when you eat it, all the toxins that you're around in your house, and that can range from household cleaners to tainted water. And then they sit there and then they just take you through it medically, what it all means, and where what organs in your body are suffering and what it's doing to you and so forth.
That's crazy.
And that to me seems like the way to handle this. If we have the time to do so, which is the big question. No one seems to have any time.
Wow.
But yeah, it's because when you get this kind of a picture, you find out who you are, you find out what you've been ingesting,
right,
and you find out what it's done to you, and then you find out what you can do about it. And 95% of the cases, it comes down to diet, supplements, exercise.
I'm going to have to change my stuff.
Those three things. Those should be the same three things that are... the same two things, diet and exercise, that have been human nature since we were cavemen.
Well,
you know, and that's my biggest complaint about sedentary lifestyles is that we never had one before.
Well,
you know, we're always out in the field doing this or that, and now we're sitting.
Right. All right. Well, we want to thank Robert Yaling.
Thank you
very much for being on the show today.
All right.
Thank you so much for being on here. This is just such an eye-opener. And thank you so much for being on here and for providing us with such incredible information. And I'm going to be putting a picture of the book on Facebook and everything so that people can see it. And I put posts up and links to everything so people can go check out, you know, check the book out and check out your websites and all your stuff. So we're going to put some more posts up and some pictures after this. But I want to thank you so much, Robert, for being on the show today.
Thank you.
You really have hit home with a lot of stuff, so I thank you.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure, and I just hope if we can get a couple of people who don't belong on these medications off of them, then we're doing good.
That's true. All right, well, thank you so much, and we look forward to speaking with you again in the future about some of your other books.
Okay, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Wow, that was Robert Yaling. That was an incredible, informative information. Just wonderful. You guys got to read this book. Again, it's Jeff Emerson and Robert Yaling. It's Beyond ADHD, Overcoming the Label and Thriving. He talks about so many different things and different aspects and, you know, misdiagnoses and why everything's been happening all these decades and things. So check the book out, please. It's been a real eye-opener. And we're going to hear...
You make connections.
Yes. And we're going to hear here for a second from some of our prior guests.
This is the rock band Foe, and you're listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block.
LA Talk Radio.
Chanel Juan.
On iHeartRadio.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Evernow, and you're listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block on LA Talk Radio Channel 1.
This is Hurting the Heartbeat, and you're listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block on LA Talk Radio, Channel 1 and iHeartRadio.
Booyah!
What's up, y'all? This is Mac Matt. I'm up in here getting in with Jenny from the block on that LA radio talk station. Tune in, man. One love.
One love.
Hey, this is Slam on Jenny's Real Talk on the Block, LA Talk Radio on channel one.
And iHeartRadio.
Yep.
Don't do drugs.
He says, don't.
Hey, this is Maxwell Carlisle from Society One, and you're listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block on LA Talk Radio Channel 1 and iHeartRadio.
It's your boy, Yellow Boy the Duke, a.k.a. the motherfucking Loke. If you didn't know, we on Jenny's Real Talk on the Block / iHeartRadio / LA Talk Radio. You hear me?
This is Killset, and you're listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block on LA Talk Radio, Channel 1, and iHeartRadio.
Yeah! Oh, those were some of our past guests on Jenny's Real Talk on the Block. We'll be adding some more very soon. I have a bunch that I need to send to our buddy here at the station, but we want to thank you so much for listening in this week. Like I said, Robert Yaling from the book Beyond ADHD, Overcoming the Label and Thriving. We'll be back next week, the 17th, with Adelia Bridges, but it's Dilly Briggs from the Subject Press, as well as Sonia. She'll be in the... she'll be here. So I can't remember her name. anyway, Dilly Briggs from the Subject Press will be here next week. I had a total brain fart. And we will be talking to you really soon. Peace out. We'll see you next week.
Gotta go.
Again, Wednesday, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We'll be back next week. Look on Facebook for Jenny's Real Talk on the Block for our posts, as well as Jenny's Real Talk on Twitter and Jenny's Real Talk on Instagram. All right, we'll see you next week.
Bye. Say bye, Michaela.
You're listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block with Jennifer DeVoe, only on LA Talk Radio.